Welcome to Scaling the Gap, the podcast for leaders who refuse to settle. I'm Madeline McRae, CEO and co-founder of ProQ. Here, we cut through the noise to tackle the real challenges of scaling your business while staying true to your purpose. Every episode brings candid conversations, proven strategies, and the kind of insights that don't just inform, they ignite action. If you're ready to stop talking about impact and start making it, you're in the right place. Let's get started. Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Scaling the Gap. Recently, I have been sharing with you some guests who are doing some cool, innovative new things. And I feel like I keep telling you, never had a guest on my show who's done this before. And we're going to keep on rolling with that today. I have a brand new guest for you that I am super excited to share with you because he's doing something really innovative in a space that you might think, is there a lot of innovation going on over there? And so I just really wanted to give you a chance to get to meet him and to hear what he's doing. So Adam, welcome to the show.
Hey, Madeline, how are you? Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. My dad always used to say, if I was doing any better, I'd be twins. And here we are today. I'm living that. So it's been a fantastic day today. Super excited to have you on the show. You're doing some really cool things. So why don't you share with our audience a little bit of who you are and the work you do in this world?
So I am with Anago Cleaning Systems. We are a commercial cleaning franchising company, and we are a three-tier franchise model. So let me just, that's a lot already, right?
Like, Yeah.
So when I say three-tier model, I just want to differentiate because most franchise models that people are familiar with are two-tier models. So like, you know, McDonald's and then the people who own the restaurants.
Sure.
I'm at Anago corporate offices, let's call it. And then we have what's called a master franchise. And then they locally have unit franchises. So easiest way to kind of conceive that is flip it upside down. So when I say commercial cleaning, probably the image that pops into most of your listeners' heads is like the guy with the mop and a bucket, okay? Or a vacuum or something, right?
Yep.
And that's not wrong. That would be the unit franchisee and their team. And most commercial cleaning is done at night. So when you think of commercial cleaning, you're thinking of our unit franchisee. He's got his team, he's got his chemicals, equipment, and he's keeping the buildings clean and keeping the customers happy.
Yep.
But what our model says is, well, where did he get his customers from?
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, so you need some sort of sales and marketing, some sort of advertising going on. And then it secondarily says, okay, well, what about during the day? Does he just never get to sleep? Is it 24/7? Or
right.
Is there in there during the day that can handle some of the daytime aspects, right? So some of the daytime customer service issues, the billing and collection of the invoices. And so what our model does is it basically separates the daytime and the nighttime into two separate franchise opportunities. So the unit franchise is the janitorial franchise, exactly what you'd picture. The master, what we call a master franchise, is the day job. This is someone who has zero people on staff that do any cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
But what they do is they're the white collar in the blue collar industry.
Yep.
They do the sales and marketing, they manage the websites, they do all the collections of any invoices, handle any customer service. And so what's unique is that you have two totally separate businesses in the same industry, let's call it, almost in the same business, if you will.
Yeah.
But they handle two totally separate aspects of the business. And then both of them, right, they save massively on overhead because the unit franchise has no sales staff, has no website that it needs to spend money on, doesn't have to be a tech expert. And then they have the master franchise who does all the sales and everything like that, but doesn't have a single person on the team that does any cleaning. So they're all mm-hmm. creating a cool synergy along the way.
Yeah, I love that. One of my favorite pieces of business advice from a really successful client of mine many years ago was, in order to be successful, you concentrate and dominate. And that is exactly what you're doing in your model. You are allowing the people who have the heart and the desire to build the teams and get out there and do the actual labor part of the work and are present and okay with being diligent with the details right there with that fingerprints on the windows, right? You got those people who can concentrate and dominate on that part. And then you have your master franchisees who are more looking at the administrative, the, you know, daytime hours, the sales, marketing, and dynamics of that. So if you have a master franchise who is a franchisee who is managing, I imagine, quite a large territory, and then underneath them, there's multiple unit franchise territories, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Unit franchise, it's not really a territory.
Mm-hmm.
It's a actually, it's sort of an unlimited book of business. So if someone bought a franchise, I live in South Florida. If someone bought a unit franchise in the South Florida territory, the question wouldn't be, you know, what area of South Florida do you want? It would be, how much business do you want?
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe you start small. I think our most common franchise that's sold at the unit level is essentially like a side hustle, right? It's I'm looking to make a couple grand extra a month. Maybe I already have a day job and I'm just looking to make a couple of bucks. And then we have unit franchises that grow. I just gave an award actually to a lady in the Philadelphia area. She has $1 million a year cleaning business.
Yeah.
And she has no sales team, no website, nothing. She's a unit franchise in the Philadelphia area and just manages a really kick butt crew, and part of her family's involved, and they have $1 million business.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love that they can concentrate and dominate on their own specific area of interest and of gift, right? Like the people who are really excellent at sales and marketing aren't necessarily going to be diligent about making sure that the final product is what it needs to be, right? So those two different dynamics, super, super, super cool. So how did you get into this? Like this is, first of all, a really innovative way of franchising, which is what I noticed and loved. And I thought that my people would really appreciate hearing a new angle. And also, like, how did you get into this? This has got to be something behind the story.
So I got in because actually my father founded the business. Now, transparently, he founded it in 1989. I had zero desire to get into the family business. I didn't get involved until 2009.
Okay.
And my backstory was at IBM for a little while. And in 2008, 2009, obviously there was, you know, the big recession we all dealt with, and there was a round of layoffs. I wasn't laid off. I was the young analyst that they had brought in to literally review employee numbers, and had no names or anything like that. It was employee numbers, salary packages, exit packages, and make recommendations to the team on basically who was getting the golden parachutes, who was getting not so golden parachutes.
Right.
And it just left a really sick feeling in me going like, man, you know, I could stay here and 20 years from now, they hire some other 20 something year old kid who's deciding my fate based on my employee number.
Right.
Something just felt off. I was home over the holidays that year. And my dad goes, you know, you got to check this whole Anago thing out. I think I have the tiger by the tail. Come look at it. And it was 6 months later that I ended up joining and got into the business.
I love it. That's so cool. And you had mentioned in the green room that you have a pretty significant technology component part to the business. And I'm assuming that a little nod to your background here, bringing some technology to the forefront. So tell us a little bit about that too.
We've invested heavily in technology, but not where you'd think, right? Because nobody has a better mop. Nobody has, maybe there are out there, right? I mean, if you watch QVC, maybe, you know, but...
QVC can convince you of almost anything. And you're like, where is my credit card?
Yeah.
And then you have the mops you didn't even want.
At our size, right? All my competitors can get any of the equipment and chemicals I can get. There's nothing creative in that space for now. Where we said, you know what? The best place to invest in our technology was in the customer service side. To explain that, I have to give you a little bit of a story. So when you go to any other type of franchise business or any regular business, frankly, there's usually like three levels of service that you can expect to get, right? So you go to a restaurant and you have a wonderful waitress. The food is delightful. It's amazing. And so that's your joy experience, right? You have your terrible experience and you go in, the waiter's a jerk. The food is cold. You're like, I'm never going to be here. Or you have that sort of middle of the road, like, it was fine.
Sure.
You have nothing special. In cleaning, we don't have three experiences. We have two. Mm-hmm. Nobody has the, oh my goodness, my office building is so clean. I'm going to get my janitor a birthday present. It is, oh my goodness, doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So either you get to your office and you go, well, I got to work. And you sit down and you start working and you don't think about it.
Yeah.
Or you get to your office and you're going like, why is my trash can still full? Like, why does the bathroom smell so bad? What's going on here? And so in our line of work, you've heard about it years ago, like back when like Google reviews came out, where it was like best practices, make sure you respond to every review. That's the time to make a friend. And so we realized that the bad experiences are the time to make a friend. And I don't want to make it sound like there's lots of bad experiences going on, but in my model, right? Good news is, you know, because it's such a human element, it's not getting exported to China. Amazon doesn't come to town and put me out of business, right? But at the same time, because there is that human element where a person has to walk into your office and go clean it, there is the, we're all human, we all make mistakes. Right. They yep. will inevitably occur. And so in our model, what we said is, let's invest in software that makes that pain point an opportunity to make a friend. So we created a software that's proprietary to us. We call CleanCom, Clean Communication. We're not yep. very good with naming conventions, but you know, not kind of lame, but CleanCom. And what CleanCom does, it says, if there is an experience that you feel that there's an issue with, you're able to take out your phone, take a picture of whatever that full trash can or whatever sure. it would be. You can communicate it with the franchisee that's servicing your building. It's all private communication, so you're not exchanging yep. cell phone numbers or anything like that. It has built-in Google Translate. Mm-hmm. So you can communicate in whatever language you speak in. They yep. can communicate in whatever language they speak in, and everyone can, you know, can still keep communication open. It has a 2-hour response guarantee, so you're not, you know, calling and mm-hmm. hoping they'll fix it in the next couple of days. Like, you will sure. get a response on what's going on within 2 hours. And we have what we call preventive analytics built into that. So if, say, if you know, someone has multiple reports on a particular franchise owner or multiple different clients are saying, this guy just is not cleaning the restroom.
Yeah, right, right.
The master franchisee in the region gets that reporting and is able to say, hey, wait a minute, let's bring this guy in for a retraining to make sure he's properly doing the bathrooms before yep. it becomes a future issue.
Yeah. Love it. This is so cool. And it's just one of those, we know it's going to happen, right? Let's not pretend it's not going to happen. It's going to happen repetitively. And the more you do, the more likely it is to happen. Doesn't mean that you're bad. It just means that you're human, right? Like, might be that you, the whole entire space was clean, but you just forgot that one trash can because it's hiding underneath the desk, tucked in the back left. You didn't see it, right? So just that sort of stuff is just normal. And I love that, that we're not going to take this predictable problem in our business and shove it down. Pretend it's not going to happen. We're going to proactively address it and use it to create a moment of learning, a moment of future prevention, and a moment of creating connection, right? I had a customer service team back in the day during my corporate career, and we brought in someone to help the customer service team elevate their capacity, right? And one of the things he taught is turning a moment of misery into a moment of magic. What can you do when someone has a bad experience and it's within your control to transform that into a good experience, and more than just a good experience, where they feel like, wow, I was really well taken care of. And that's exactly what your software is looking to do on a macro level. It's really cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, love it. Love it. Well, I want to transition over to a couple things that we were jamming about a little bit before we got here, before we turned the record button on. And one of the things we were talking about is the journey of building your business, going from, you know, a family business, a little smaller business, into a mid-sized business, into an enterprise organization, and just that, the difficulty of that journey. And that's one of those, you know, maybe unexpected difficulties of growing a business. I always talk about what were the unexpected delights and the unexpected hardships. And this is probably one of those. So share a little bit about that experience. What have you been going through as you've been building out this really awesome business?
You know, it's been ups and downs and lefts and rights. And, when I first started, my dad goes, you know, congratulations, you left your highfalutin finance job. And he literally made me a telemarketer by day and a franchisee's assistant at night cleaning a daycare. So, I mean, I started at doing everything. Literally.
Humble beginnings. Yep.
Oh, yeah. And I will say it framed my leadership style, right? Because doing that, and then I did sales, I did customer service, I did invoicing, and then I was traveling the country meeting with the franchisees. So here I am, by then I'm late 20s.
Yeah.
But like, you know, and but most of these master franchise owners had been in the business for 5-10 years.
Right.
Or 50 something year old former CEOs. And it's like, hey, come on.
Yeah, that's right.
And so I had to kind of take on a servant leadership approach of you know, here's some tips I know, but like, how can I help you? How can we at the corporate office help you grow your business? And I feel like as I kind of climbed the ranks, I had to keep that mentality throughout. Look, at the end of the day, we're in business because you're in business. So how can we help you grow your business? And then in 2015, I was appointed the president, and the former president, he was a fun guy. He was from West Virginia by way of Texas. So he always, he had this wild Southern accent, and he's retiring, and he gets me a business card holder and it says PUDSOBIC. And I go, what does that even mean? And he goes, it stands for, and I'm not going to do his accent, but it rings better in his accent. He goes, it stands for poor, unfortunate, dumb SOB in charge.
That's hilarious.
Thank you. Sometimes I feel like that, you know?
Thank you very much for that. Good looking out.
So, you know, in the first, the first handful of years, I'll admit, and I've said this before, I feel like I was learning how to CEO.
Sure.
You know, I'd been in leadership roles before, but never been the guy.
Yeah.
Or the gal, you know, the SOB in charge.
That's right.
And so I would say, you know, the first handful of years, you know, you learn about it and you make your mistakes. And it was probably coming into COVID where, you know, we all dealt with just the madness of that.
Yes.
We were, I mean, man, the first, geez, when that like March, April, when everything like right. life went down in 2020, I think I was on the phone twice a week with our entire system. Mm-hmm. Just here's what we know. Here's what we don't. Here's what we're sitting on. Here's what we hope to find out. Here's what we hope doesn't happen. I mean, just constant communicate, update, but constantly being in front of everybody. And I feel like that was a turning point for me where you learn, you go, okay, wait a minute. This is the level of communication and vision casting and just constantly being out ahead of your system, talking about, you know, kind of leading the charge that is required to be a proper CEO.
Right.
I know I've been talking for a while here.
No, that's good.
This
good.
Goes on.
No, it's really good. I'll just take a pause here, let you catch your breath. The journey from operator to CEO is a real journey. And it doesn't matter the style of your business. There are 1,000% things that made you successful before you ascended that C-suite role that you have to let go and you have to leave behind. And you have to, you know, you're telling me you got to bring in people smarter than you, that you trust to do the job, that you can circle back to, that you know with some level of certainty are elevating the experience of your organization. And that is incredibly difficult. When you are used to being a high performer whose performance is what makes you successful, and then you have to become a high performing leader where the performance of the people you're leading is what makes you successful, that capacity to duplicate your leadership into your leadership team is one of the key components to the organizations or the leaders who take their businesses to the next level and those who stay stuck at the level that they're at.
Yeah.
Right? That leadership, we call it leadership duplication, right? You can be a fantastic leader. You can be a fantastic even manager. But if you can't be fantastic at leadership duplication into your management team, into your leadership team, into that executive leadership team, because it takes something wildly different to inspire a leader, or, you know, in your organization, your franchisees, they're also CEOs, right? To inspire other CEOs who are already successful from their past, who are strong and independent, who have a clear idea of who they are and what they're doing, and to inspire them and influence them to take on new actions, to take on new thought patterns, right? So that whole influence is more powerful than power is what the very best leaders need to learn. And in learning that, there's a lot of letting go. There's so many things you have to let go along the way. And that process can be filled with grief, right? Because there are parts of you that you love and you're like, wait a minute, I have to stop doing that. Wait a minute, right? It can be really hard, very confronting.
Yeah. As you ascend the proverbial ranks, you ascend those ranks because the way you think is right. Works. You know, your gut instincts are strong and they tell you what to do and they're usually accurate. And so then you get to this place where you're going, okay, now I have to let go of a lot of these decisions. But what got me here was my gut and my decision-making process. And now I have to let go of it. And so it was funny because we're coming out of COVID and I was at this place where I was like, I felt a little flat footed. I needed to grow our team. I felt, you know, very stagnant. I'm definitely someone who, you know, my first instinct is like, okay, how do we make the wheel rounder? How do we make the process more streamlined? Mm-hmm. Around that time where, you know, you hit one of those plateaus and you go, it's not a process problem. It's a lack of people problem. And so I actually reached, I'm on the board at my church and I reached out to my pastor. And they've been growing like crazy. They were like the number 8 fastest growing church in the country and phenomenal. I mean, they're doing a great job. I reached out to him and I was like, hey man, you've grown so fast and you've made these amazing hires and they've all been home runs. Like how did you do that? I got that disclaimer, like, we're in very different industries.
Right. What the church needs and what your cleaning company needs, wildly different. Yes.
In souls, I'm keeping buildings clean. Yeah, we're
both about cleaning, right? Cleaning souls and cleaning buildings. Hey, I love it.
Very different. So maybe there's, you have more appeal than me, but what did you do? And he goes, he told me about this book called Who, like Jeff Smart. And I'm sure everyone's heard of like Who, Not How, and stuff like that, where it talks about, you know, the people, not the process, is the way forward. But this was specific about, okay, if you've identified that, but now how do you hire those people? Yeah. And so I read this book, and it's a very easy read, like a couple hundred pages. And it was right when I think the iPhones came out with that thing where you could scan the text like right off the page with the camera. And so I'd read a page and I was like, oh, that's good. And I'd take a picture and I'd read the next page. Oh, that's good too. And so I have like, you know, 50 pictures of this book in my
basically phone. Screenshotted the whole book into your phone.
Exactly. And someone just put this in Word format. Mm-hmm. But I used that and I went from being someone who, I don't want to call it afraid, but uncomfortable in hiring. I went from someone uncomfortable in hiring to someone where, you know, you could dump me in any industry, in any part of the country, and tell me I need to hire any position and I can figure it out and be totally fine doing it. And going from, you know, a lot of the team at the time was probably, I would say it was my father's previous team and existing people. And I ultimately had to build my team out. And since reading that book, I've hired about 9 like director, VP, C-suite people in a matter of just a few years.
Yeah.
And so we went, we sat with the team, we met together, and it was probably 2021. And we were doing at that point as a system, we were doing around mid 60 million in system wide revenue. Not mine, I just get a royalty off of that. But we were doing around 60 something. And I said, I want to be $100 million brand and I want to do it in 2 years. And we sat down and we brainstormed on it and came up with a 5-pronged plan. We called it the $100 million challenge because, again, we're not very good
at
conventions. We're uncreative with that. But we said, okay, what can we take from the lessons from COVID about just communicate and messaging and constantly putting that out in front of everybody? And we were able to do it in 19 months.
Wow.
And it was funny because I go back to that pastor and I'm like, man, I thought like, I would feel different now that I have $100 million business. And I'm like, and he goes, I know your problem. He goes, you're thinking about $200 million now.
Right. That's the thing. Like when you climb, there's always more you can see, right? It's that the philosophy of that breaking that barrier. You have the first person who breaks and like, okay, well, there might be an outlier. And then the second person who breaks, you're like, oh, wait a minute. What if not? And by the third person, now it becomes common. Like you can do it. Let's go. Right. It's really, really exciting to do. And I love that $100 million challenge. I also want to comment. I love that you're like, hey, I'm not very good at naming stuff. I feel the same way about my own stuff. All of my baby dolls growing up were Baby Maddie, Baby Maddie, Baby Maddie, Baby Maddie. Like every single doll I called Baby Maddie. There was not an innovative name out there. My first consulting firm I started was called M.M. McCray Coaching and Consulting, right? Like, so naming conventions, I'm right there with you, my friend. Like, it's not easy. Let that to more creative minds. My business partner, wildly creative with naming stuff. He comes up with these brilliant names. I'm like, let's do that. That sounds so cool. I want that. It sounds so good. And meanwhile, I would have called it like the $100 million challenge. I'm right there with you. So I have loved this. This is so interesting. The dynamic part of your leadership development came from being forced out into the forefront, right? When your dad made you do the tour, right? Made you take that servant leadership part. And then also in COVID, again, you were forced out into the forefront by having to give people a sense of leadership, casting the vision. Where are we going? How are we navigating? How are we getting through? And then you cast yourself out into the forefront a third time with this need to hire and saying like, okay, how do I make sure that I can make this a home run? Going from that, I'm really intimidated to hire. It feels uncomfortable. And it's super normal that it feels intimidating and uncomfortable to hire a C-suite level person or a VP level person when you've never done it before, right? You hardly became a C-suite person yourself, right? Like you just got there and then you have to bring other people on, right? I certainly have been in a position where, you know, I moved really quickly through an organization, got promoted really fast. And then you're, you know, the youngest person leading people who are twice your age. And it can be really uncomfortable when you become successful young to have a dynamic of a very highly experienced team that you need to now lead and attract, right? Like, that's really super cool. I love this book recommendation. We'll certainly link it in our show notes for you listeners out there so you can take a read of it. But let's just shift gears one more time before we get to my flagship question, which is, let's talk really quickly about unexpected delight. We talked about some of the turbulence. We talked about what you built and the technology and the structure, all super cool. What was one of the unexpected delights, something you never anticipated you would get out of taking this business journey and that you're super glad that you did?
Well, that's a good question. I think I'm someone who's probably naturally an introvert, even though I, you know, I call myself an extroverted introvert, where I can, mm-hmm. I can turn it on if I'm on the camera or on the stage or whatever. But I'm naturally definitely someone who's introverted. And I will say that it's inadvertently, accidentally, you know, kind of brought me out of my shell. I was very shy in middle and high school, probably even, you know, reasonably shy, but at least, you know, but in college, there was at least some beers that you could have and you go, I'm not that shy.
Liquid courage.
liquid courage. But as an adult, I'm not someone who's very social. I'm very reserved. And so it's been really great being able to, for myself, to, you know, just kind of get pulled out of my shell. But then I'm also using that same lesson now with, like, I have three kids and my oldest, you know, she's my showstopper. She's, you know, she gets it from her mother. She's, you know, she can get out on in front of everyone. My middle daughter, she's the shyest little thing on the planet. And just being able to say, like, that's okay to be shy. Right. It's okay to feel reserved or nervous. But at the same time, like, you can use that and use that to your benefit and use that and use that so people know that when you speak, you don't speak often, so they better listen up.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool. I know a lot of extremely powerful leaders who are all introverts. There was actually a period of time when I was in a coaching cohort, and every single person in the room except for me was a profound introvert. And I was like, am I an introvert? And I was like, no, girl, you're not an introvert, okay? You are a high extrovert. It is what it is. But I feel like over time, what happens with us high extroverts as we lead, you have to do your inner work. You have to journey inward. And for high introverts, you have to journey outward. So the dynamics, you have to have both component parts as a really solid leader, the ability to reflect, the ability to analyze, the ability to tap into that vision and to tap, you mentioned your gut a couple of times, to tap into that inner instinct and be able to translate it into something that's compelling for other people. And then to be able to be external and capture the vision and be able to inspire action in your people. So there is a very important feathering of the gas and the brake pedal in leadership with that introversion, extroversion component part, and the dynamics of where you need to grow and to polish. It's different, depends on the cards you bring to the table, right? Yeah. So mine was, I had to learn how to journey inward far more, and yours is, you had to learn how to journey outward. That's a really interesting dynamic. I love that. Very cool. Well, this has been fantastic. I have so appreciated your journey through servant leadership and the way you've brought technology into your business, really innovative business model, all of the journey and joys and sorrows of having to build out a team. And with everything that you have journeyed through, Adam, I am so curious as to whether you consider yourself to be successful.
This was actually an interesting one. I was thinking about this for a while, and I think my success, the more successful I've become in business, the more I think my success comes from my family. And I've gone out of my way to deliberately, you know, now that I know how to hire people who are smarter than me and get out of the way a little bit, I've really and thoroughly enjoyed trying to clear my day so that I can actually just spend time with my kids, spend time with my wife. And so, you know, in that regard, I'm extremely successful, and it has nothing to do with work.
Yeah. I mean, it's so interesting. Success is one of the dynamics that people get wrong, right? Because they think it's something that someone else tells you are, and it's something that we have to gauge that we are, right? And our work can give us some component parts of that, but so many of my guests, and, you know, I only interview successful individuals by worldly standards, right? So all of my guests bring some dynamic of a personal contribution, a personal something that they're doing outside of just their work. And for some, like you, it really has very little, we'll say, to do with work. It's really much more focused inwardly. I would say also there's some component part in your success paradigm that includes that your own personal development and growth, like your capacity to stretch your own self, that featured a lot in your story. I wonder if that's also part of the dynamic of that evaluation of whether you see yourself as successful.
It was a blessing and a curse. My dad said, if you're not moving forward, you're falling behind. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always striving to do, you know, to be 1% better. I watched this, it was on Facebook actually years ago. They've tried to get, I think they were trying to compete with YouTube or something. And they did this, it was this video series about, it was about Tom Brady, the quarterback.
Yep.
And they, and it was his trainer. And they go, you know, when a kid graduates college and becomes an NFL quarterback, he can go from senior year in college to 1 year of playing in the NFL, and he can go and be like 30% better. Right. Mm-hmm. Develop just, you know, overnight massively over that year. He goes, when you're at Tom Brady's level, if we can get 0.5% better every year, right, you know, then that's the goal. It's just 1%. Like I can get one, mm-hmm, just a sliver better. I'm not remotely comparing myself to Tom Brady on any stretch. Right. But I look at it like that and I go, okay, you know, what is something I can do to get just 1% better this month? What can I, you know, maybe I need to focus a little bit more on my relationships. Maybe I need to focus more on my financial stuff or marketing, or maybe I need to focus more on how I communicate. I'm trying to say less, even though I just caught myself saying right there. I heard it coming up too.
Yeah,
but just little things like that add up, and it's sort of like the compounding effect, right?
It's, sure.
1% is not that much today, but if it's 1% every month for the next, you know, 10 years, now you're talking about hundreds of percents.
Right.
That you're that much further along and that much better. So I view it in that way, where it's, how do I get a little bit better? It's a curse because, you know, I'm never happy with the status quo. Sure. I'm always driven to get a little further, a little bit more, a little better. You know, short sword, a little sharper.
Yeah, there's a healthy discontent in that. Like there's a little bit of that, right? That's okay. And one of the things I love to do is to listen while we chat through all the things and to backwards engineer a little algorithm for each one of my guests of what success component parts are involved in your definition. So I've taken a stab at yours, Adam, and let's give it a go. Let's see how close we got. And if maybe you feel there might be some missing component parts, I took some liberties. Because, you know, I leaned into what we'd already chatted through. So here's what I'm going to say. For Adam, success equals thriving family relationships, capacity to invest time in meaningful family and personal relationships, continually being 1% better, and then having new mountains to climb.
That's pretty good.
Pretty good? Nailed it close? All right. Love it. Well, I have so... Yeah, I will. Absolutely. It's a fun thing to remember that you set the paradigm of what success means to you, and then you can gauge where on each one of those component parts, how are you doing, right? And if you're doing, killing it, yep, here I am being successful. And too many people hesitate to claim their success crown when they've earned it, right? And it's earning it, being successful and feeling successful doesn't prevent you from continuing to be more successful. And too many people are overly cautious with claiming it because they feel it's going to smother their drive, but it doesn't. It ignites it. So cool. I love it.
That $100 million challenge thing, that was my first lesson in success not being a place.
Yes.
You know, you're looking for something. And the funniest part is, you know, you said I put myself out there 4 times. It's actually 5.
Oh.
Right after that, I literally got on stage and we put together, there's more prongs to the plan, and now it's $300 million. We want to do it by 2028. And again, we're not original, so we're calling it Vision 2028.
Love it.
And you get off the stage and you go, holy crap, did I just commit to that in front of everybody?
Yes. Yes. And there is something to that. Like, I boldly put this out there and now I got to go make it happen, right? Like, so there is some of that too, like that human respect component, that publicization. Say that 10 times fast. I definitely got that word wrong. Of your goals, making them more public puts a little bit more onus on you to go get it. And it's good. It's that healthy discontent, a little healthy fire under your feet makes you walk a little faster. So don't burn your toes. Well, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us, sharing your story, being so open about your leadership journey, about the development of your business, and about all these different dynamics. And even about, you know, humbly accepting like, hey, my my business isn't what makes me feel successful. It's my personal relationships that are catalyzed by my capacity inside of my business. And that's really beautiful. And I so appreciate you sharing that with us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course, my pleasure. And if people want to learn more about you, where can they find you?
So if you want to learn about Anago, we're at Anago, A-N-A-G-O, cleaning.com. We're on all the social media. And if you want to reach out to me personally, I'm very active on LinkedIn. So just type in Adam Pavlitz and shoot me a note, and I will be sure to get back to you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Adam. We appreciate your time. And for those of you at home today, make sure that you look at where can you be 1% better as you continue your leadership and growth journey. Till next time. Bye for now.
Thanks for tuning in to Scaling the Gap. If today's episode inspired you or sparked an idea, I'd love to hear about it. If you're an ambitious leader with a story to share, visit proqsystems.com, click on Media and Events, then select Podcast to apply to be our guest. We'd love to spotlight your journey. Also, don't forget to follow the show and leave us a review to help bring more transformative insights to leaders just like you. You can also connect with me, Madeline McRae, on LinkedIn for more conversations, access to our exclusive tools and resources. Until next time, keep scaling your impact and building a legacy that matters.